Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, March the 25th. Today we'll be chatting with our friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. We're going to talk about a couple of things, a couple of primary issues. One is these comments by Lieutenant Governor Patrick that have created a little bit of controversy, but I didn't hear the comments, I guess, the way a lot of people did. I suppose he could have chosen his words more carefully. But I don't think it probably didn't come out right, as they like to say. But I don't think it was as bad as some people are saying. We're also going to talk a little bit about what's happening up in the Congress with respect to this subsidy or this bill that will be clearing the Senate today. And what happens in the House? Well, we're not exactly sure about that. So let me say hello to our friend George Rodriguez. George, it is absolutely beautiful here in North Texas. I mean, I look out the window and I the last couple of days have been, and I guess tomorrow is going to be the same. I mean, it's like a beautiful spring day, George.
It is summer. Summer has hit here. It's 93 degrees. It is beautiful. I mean, it's very sunny. But it is 93 degrees, and that it feels hot. It feels very,
yeah.
Very hot.
Well, yeah, I mean, it feels warm here. I wouldn't say quite hot yet. I'm sure in a couple of months I'll be saying hot. But it feels pretty warm. Here's a little on this day in history, George, that I think you're going to appreciate. You and I, sort of baby boomers. 1942, Aretha Franklin was born on this day. What a performer,
wow.
She was over the years. She passed away in 2018, but that lady could sing. Let's just put it that way, George.
Oh gosh, yes. Lots of memories from the 60s and 70s with her.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of great songs. That's all you can say. I mean, I remember she had that album. I think it was The Best of Aretha Franklin, or Aretha Franklin's Greatest Hits, something like that. That was just, it's one of those, I remember I had that album on 8-track tape, if you remember that. Remember those?
8-track yeah.
Tapes? I had that album in an 8-track tape when we used to hear that in the cars. Remember that, George? When you and
yep,
I used
and
to
then
listen
we moved
to
the cassettes.
Then we went
yeah,
to cassettes,
we moved to the cassettes,
that's right.
We thought that was fantastic. We thought that was
we
very
thought,
fantastic.
Except that I thought the 8-track tapes had better audio than the cassettes.
Yeah, they did. I thought they did. That's true.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they had much better audio quality, that is. But because of the technical stuff, I guess, you had four tracks, so you couldn't fit albums properly, and so you had dead air and all that technical stuff. But I thought the quality was better than the cassettes, but then, of course, we went into CDs, and I guess that made us forget cassettes, 8-track tapes, LPs, and reel-to-reel, George. Remember those?
Gosh. The reel-to-reel are still around. A lot of people still have those.
Well, yeah.
Get away from Teddy. I apologize.
Oh, that's all right. Teddy just likes me. He just likes me. He just likes it when you're on the air with us.
those reel-to-reel, a lot of people have collected them. And use them still as, kind of like vintage.
Yeah.
Like video phones or whatever, the vidaphones that they used to call them.
Yeah.
But we're back to vinyl records. I mean,
Right.
So it's going full circle.
Yeah, we're going for it. But next thing you know, we'll have 78s. We'll bring back the 78s, and then
and
it'll 45. Be full.
And
45s.
And
then it'll be.
Yep.
I actually liked, I was a huge fan of 45s because,
yeah.
You know, they,
oh,
they were just
all
so
convenient.
Yeah, convenient. Well, George, we're going to talk a little politics today. A couple of big stories that I wanted to get your feedback on. And let's start with Lieutenant Governor Patrick, who said something. I know exactly what he's trying to say because in principle, I agree that we got to get the country back to work. I'm not saying we should rush into it. I mean, we should listen to the scientists. I understand all of that. But at some point, you got to get the country back to work for one simple reason. What we are spending to keep the country floating is totally unsustainable. I mean,
that's
simply,
right.
I don't care what we sign over the next couple of days. I think, I'm sure we're not going to sign a perfect bill. But even if it was a perfect bill, it's unsustainable. There's simply no treasury that can finance paying people to stay home for 2 or 3 months. I mean, at some point, you run out of money, as they say. So when people
that's
say, we got to get back to work, they're, you know.
We mean that.
Yeah, well. Aren't we supposed to get back to work? I mean, if you're telling me that we're going to be locked up for the next 6 months because we can't go outside, okay, that may be the case. But, George, that's unsustainable. That's my point.
It is. I mean, well, you know, I mean, first of all, we're adding $2 trillion with a T, $2 trillion to the spending, you know, of the United States, to the debt. $2 trillion. I mean, that's we were not too long ago. We were griping that that Obama had put us $1 trillion in the hole, and you know, and problems of such. And here, in one fell swoop, we're going to go $2 trillion. All right, fine. The issue with the economy is that's what's made America great: our free economy, our economy that. You know, our ability to produce, our ability to sell and buy, and, you know, that is what makes America great. Now, you know, we can argue back and forth, you know, well, you know, we've got to take care of the health. It's a balancing act that we're having to do between public health and the economy. And at some point, you've got to say, well, you know, if there is no public health, then, you know, there is no economy. But at the same time, if there's no economy, there is no public health either.
Right.
You know, it doesn't
well,
mean
it, it
do
comes
it.
Back to me again. It is you're exactly right. It is a balance. And if the scientist, you know, Dr. Fauci or that other lady, Dr. Birx, I think everybody's falling in love with Dr. Birx, you know, not only a beautiful woman, but what a great contribution she is to the team. But I mean, if they tell me in 7 or 8 days, look, I'm sorry, we need another week, I'll do it. If they tell me we need 2 more weeks,
yeah.
I'll do it. But at some point, it
but
seems
you do
to
it
me
for permanently. Yeah, right. At some point, we've got to say okay. And I think that this is, you know, one of the criticisms that the media has been heaping on President is that you know he said that. We might go back to work, you know, by Easter. Well, you know, the role of a leader is to be optimistic, is to give you hope, you know, and that's all I think that he is doing in this aspect is he's just saying, well, you know, this is not the way it's going to be forever. Obviously, we got to go back to work.
Right.
And, you know, I think that some people that would prefer to be critical than to let him be optimistic.
Right. Well, George, do you know anybody who likes being locked up in their house?
No,
I mean, even people who are retired, okay,
yeah,
who are not working, are dying to get out. Because,
exactly.
I mean, most people have a life. They have things they like to do. And even if you're not out there, you know, at a 9-to-5 job every day, you know, a lot of retired people, as you know, are involved in political activities, community activities,
charities, all sorts of things.
Charities?
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, I'll give you an example. Say, at church, we have an activity in the Catholic Church. We have something called St. Vincent de Paul. It's a charity in the Catholic Church that basically supports people in our community who need money for whatever reason, to pay their rent, electricity. And on any given month, we support 10 to 15 families in the area. The only requirement is that they live in our area. That's it. If they live in our area, they qualify for help. And so here we are. We cannot help these people right now because the pantry is not open. Nobody can go into the pantry because, you know, we're afraid that it could be infected or whatever. And we cannot do home visits to people because the church does not want us out there calling on people. So that's an example. I mean, that's not something we do for profit. That's something we do to take care of people. And even that has been shut down, George. So
yeah, well, I have my elderly brother in a nursing home here in San Antonio, and we are unable to go see him. We can go see him through the windows from a distance, even. We haven't seen him, and we haven't had physical contact with him for almost 10 days now. So it's I was talking to the administrator of the nursing home, and they're seeing all sorts of issues, depression and whatnot, with the patients, with the nursing home residents, and nobody likes it. Nobody likes it, and we've got to tell ourselves, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Unfortunately, sometimes when you say that, it's taken out of context or it's debated. Well, I'm not sure what you can do.
Well, or they give it the most negative spin that you can find. I mean, for example, there's a former CEO, I think CEO of Wells Fargo. I don't know his name. I just saw the story. And this gentleman apparently said, hey, we got to go back to work at some point. So immediately people are saying, oh, he's putting profits over human beings.
Oh, yeah.
No,
exactly.
He's not.
Exactly.
No, he's not.
He's echoing a study. We've got to go to work. We can't sit home and get paid for nothing.
Right.
Although it's a great idea. I mean, it's a fabulous dream. It's not reality.
Well, and the people who sit home and get paid, there's two kinds of people that I know of who do that. 99% of them are people who earned it and now enjoy retirement, or at least they can live off the money they made, but they earned it. And then maybe the other 1% won the lottery and can sit at home and enjoy. I mean, but most people have to work in some capacity and have some kind of activity. Yeah, and so I look at it and I say, you know, when President Trump says that he wants us back, or he's hoping, because it's all an expectation, he says he wants us back by Easter, you know what? I think that would be great.
It's a goal. It is a goal, and I think that it's a worthy goal that we should try to do. You know, and that's why, we've got to take all the precautions and level this infection out now so that we can go back to work. But unfortunately, politics and negativity get in the way, and he just can't say the right thing for some people. That's all.
Well, that's it. I think there, and this is a very good point you just made, and I say this all the time. There is nothing that this man can say that is going to make a certain percentage of people happy. He can give you. I mean, he could go to some of these people and say, "I'm going to give you $1 million," and they would figure some way of criticizing him. There's just something about, I mean, look, some people just don't like them, and that's okay with me. I really don't care if they don't like them. Honestly, I don't, because it's just life is that way. I can't worry about what other people like or dislike. But my goodness, I mean, at least be fair in your assessment of the guy. And when I heard him say we may be back to work at Easter, I said, hey, that'd be a great expectation. But, George, what I think is going to happen, and this is just my gut feeling here, I don't have any inside information, but what I think is going to happen is that I think, or, you know, Easter, I believe, is what, another 2 weeks? I think so. When is Good Friday? I'm trying to remember now. Let me take a quick look here at the calendar. I think Good Friday is what, the 10th? Yeah, the 10th of April, meaning literally 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks.
2 weeks.
I think what's going to happen, George, is that we're going to get to Easter Friday or Easter week, and I think we're going to look at this thing and say, we got to keep working on New York. We got to keep working on L.A. There's some pockets in the country that are not going to be ready. It's just the bottom line. But there are other parts of the country, and I would put Texas in that category. I think Texas is okay overall.
Yeah,
we've got our problems.
I do too.
But I don't think that we have a permanent problem here. I think, you know, as long as we keep track of people and we take care of them, I could see us being – I mean, I could see me being back at a normal life in 3 weeks, George.
Yeah, I could too. I see the schools opening. I could see, I could see a certain amount of activity restarting. And, one of the things I was reading a little while ago is that apparently Bernie Sanders is threatening to hold up the Senate bill. There is a real sense that the Senate will send over a bill to the House later today.
Mm-hmm.
With a lot of stuff that, you know, we'll talk about in a little bit, but with a lot of stuff
that
I debate about. But there's a sense that that will happen. And at the same time, Bernie still is going to hold it up because he doesn't think that enough is done for the workers, whatever that means.
Yeah, well, so. Look, I think we're doing amazing to the workers, for the workers in the bill that I've heard. We're talking about sending every family, what, $2,000 or $3,000, and we're talking about giving all kinds of loans to businesses to meet their payrolls. So I think we're doing a lot, and
Sylvia, the fact of the matter is, and this is something that Bernie refused to accept, is that there is a need to sustain businesses. It's not business welfare in the pure sense at this point. This is to help them sustain themselves.
Right.
And let's face it, they are the ones that give employment.
That's it.
I mean,
you're exactly right. George, let me do this. Let me take a break, and then when we come back on the other part, we'll talk more about the bills and some of the reasons for the bill. So let me take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend George right after this. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, with our friend George Rodriguez from South Texas, where I would assume that the whole state of Texas, I saw the map, the whole state of Texas is having some pretty good weather today. So I hope it stays like that for a little bit. We were talking about this bill in the Senate, George, and before we get into some of the stuff in the bill, I know you're going to share some of that with us. In principle, you know me and I know you. In principle, you know, we would never support this kind of subsidy, if you will, to the private sector. I'm a very strong believer that government needs to get out of the way and let the private sector take care of itself. And there's a long history of the private sector doing that. They can take care of themselves. But in this case, I think it's a special situation. This virus has thrown a lot of businesses it could potentially throw a lot of companies out of business. I mean, look, I drive around, and I see these – I drove around Dallas the other day, and it's like there's nothing going on. The only thing that's open are gas stations, and that's it. Everything else is closed. And I'm sitting there saying, you know, you go by these restaurants and you go, oh my gosh, think of all the people in that restaurant who live off commissions or tips. Man, they've really been hit hard. So in principle, I don't like these kinds of you know, this kind of spending. But at this time, I'll make an exception because of the, again, because of the situation. And
yeah,
because of the
wartime.
Fact that
this is like a wartime situation.
Exactly. And because the money has to, and I was listening to the Secretary of Treasury today, and he was saying that the money will go to a company, but only for payroll. And only, you know, and we will meet, help them with their payroll, but only if the employee is on the payroll. So if they fire people, they're not going to get any money. So I'm okay
right.
with that. I'm okay with sending families.
I'm okay with those restrictions, yes. I am,
yeah,
I'm
okay
right
with
those kind of restrictions.
Absolutely. I'm okay with sending a family $3,000 so that they can get by for the next 30 days or whatever. I'm okay with that because I understand the need. Like you said, this is like a war. We did a lot of things in World War II, as I'm sure your dad told you.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, I mean, it is also similar to, you know, after 9/11, we had to sacrifice a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Right after that, you know, during World War II, I mean, there has always been, you know, these moments in history where we need to sacrifice. And that's what this is for me. I am sacrificing my principle, just like you are on this issue of growing the the government getting involved. I am sacrificing that, but I realize that these are unusual circumstances.
Right.
There are several folks that I know who work in the restaurant industry who have gotten just absolutely eviscerated by this.
Absolutely.
There are folks who work in entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
At down on the Riverwalk, who have absolutely no one at the Riverwalk. One down there. I've got somebody. I've got a friend of mine who is a ticket taker, manager ticket taker at the event center for the Spurs. There are no more Spurs games, so he's hurting.
Right.
So I mean, you've got you've got fast food or not fast food, but vendors.
Mm-hmm.
Food vendors at events at the rodeo in Houston that was canceled right in the middle of the rodeo. I mean, these are unusual circumstances, and we need to do something. So,
absolutely.
You know, a real sacrifice is needed in some cases.
Right. Well, what's interesting for those who may not be familiar with when George mentioned the Riverwalk in San Antonio is. If not your leading attraction, certainly one of them. And literally people will go to San Antonio and stay at a hotel there and have dinner there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is one of the – I mean, for me, I've been there several times. I think it's one of the most beautiful areas in an evening to sit there and have dinner and by the Riverwalk. I mean, it's just absolutely great. But you're right. It's just, there's probably, what, 20 restaurants there? And people eat outside. And those – everyone who works at those restaurants – all of those great people who provide great service and great food have all been devastated. And we're not talking about the owners of the restaurant.
No, no, no.
The
we're
people who've really
about
been
the
devastated, the server, the guy who's you know, lady or gentleman or lady who goes out every day and serves the food, the busboy who picks up, those are the people who are
the
devastated.
Cook.
I don't have a problem sending those people a check, George.
Yeah, that's really – you know, these folks have really, really been hit, and these are real American workers, small business people. I mean, they have
right.
really, really been hurt. And,
absolutely.
You know, we should do something about this because this is not something that was brought on by anything anybody did other than, well, we blame the Chinese. But
well, yeah, we'll get to China
at
another show because, yeah, we're going to get to China at another show. I mean, because – I think I sent you the article today about the number of people who are contemplating a class action suit. And, man, you can put my name on that.
Me too.
I mean, because I think that there's – we'll get back to the bill in a second, George, but I think there are two. Once we get, I mean, let's take care of the health issue first. Let's take care of the people first. Let's take care of the economy first. That's the priority right now. Let's do that first.
Right.
But once we get everything in place, the Chinese are, in my opinion, need to be punished and punished very hard. And the way to punish them, frankly, is to bring all those factories home.
Yep.
That's the way
that's
to punish
exactly
them.
Right. That's exactly right.
I mean, if you're an American businessman out there and you want to put your business in China, go right ahead. If you want to deal with a government that is not transparent, a government that was willing to put the health of your workers and your health at risk because they didn't want to tell you the truth. You know, I get irritated with these Chinese, George, because – and when I say Chinese, I'm talking about the government. I'm not talking about
the communist Chinese. The communist
government, yeah. I'm not talking about the people. I'm talking about the government. But think of all the flights and all the people that they allowed to go into that region because they didn't tell us what was happening there. And think of all of the people who were hurt, potentially took the – I mean, a lot of those people brought the virus to Italy, George.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. I mean, it was spread by their good neighbor policy.
That's right.
That was hardly being a good neighbor.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. The Welcome Society. What was that? The Welcome Home or the Welcome to the Neighborhood Society? Yeah, that's what they were. Now, George, it appears that the Senate is going to pass it tonight, the bill. It still has to go to the House, and, you know, Nancy Pelosi wanted to put all kinds of things in the bill, you know, reparations for transgenders. That's really important. You know, she wanted to basically kill all of President Trump's executive orders. The bottom line is she wanted to do through this bill, or some Democrats wanted to do through this bill what they cannot do by themselves. If she put a bill tomorrow morning in the House saying reparations for transgenders, it wouldn't get it wouldn't even get the first base. It wouldn't get anywhere. So they're trying to sneak it in there. I'm glad we caught some of it. I understand that some compromises had to be made, I guess, and maybe some things are going to go there. But what are you hearing that is in the bill that really upsets you?
Well, the biggest thing that upset me was, requirements for the big businesses, for the airline industry, for example, that they've got to place people on their boards, women, minorities, transgenders, underrepresented folks, as they call them. They are demanding that they're going to get the money that happen. Now, I fully believe that we need to put some type of restrictions on that money, that they can't be used for this, can't be used for that, must be used for this. But to go beyond that and tell and do some social engineering, that's a big problem. That's
right.
A big problem. They have no business doing that. The other problem are all of the little Christmas tree ornaments that they put on it, on these bills, such as money for the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C.
Right.
I don't understand why do you need that? You know, what does that have to do with a virus in China? You know, it has nothing to do with that.
Right.
Now,
George, by the way, let me just say something about that. That came up today in President Trump. Said he's okay with it because you're basically saving jobs.
Yeah.
If that's the, you know, that reasoning is a little bit better. You know, you're saving jobs. So that, you know, if that's, these things are always a compromise, as you know, but if that's what I have to give up, I don't feel that bad considering that we're talking about jobs. I'm sorry, you were going to say something else?
No, it was not couched that way initially. Initially, it was just, money for the arts was how it was put at first. It has since been changed, which I think is a wise use of words and compromise. Now, my understanding is that Pelosi has said that she will grudgingly support the Senate bill, but she's still not sure. On the other hand, the Senate bill is going to be voted on tonight. There are some senators like Bernie Sanders who may delay it, And, you know, the thing that really irritates me in this whole situation, some of the liberal media is as such. They report that there's still wrangling and discussion going on, but they don't tell you exactly how and who is holding it up and why they're holding it up.
Right.
And again, I have a problem. I have a problem when we've got an emergency, a major health emergency in the United States, and people are trying to do social engineering. That, you know, that is very, very aggravating.
Well, as I was saying to a local TV station, George, that if the Democrats in the House want to pass a bill for reparations to transgenders, if that's what they want to do, they should put it up for a vote by itself.
Yeah, do it separately. Do it separately.
Do it separately. Now, it's never going to get anywhere because, as you know, one of the problems the Democrats have is that they can never do these things because it's just like climate change. They all talk about climate change, but they can never take climate change, as I say, from the theory to explaining it to voters, because when they explain it to voters, they lose voters.
That makes sense.
Because the voters are saying, wait a minute, how much is this going to cost me? Okay, so they lose them. It's one of the big problems that, they have with climate change. They talk a good game, but when they actually have to put it to a vote, they don't even get Democrats, because Democrats are saying, I cannot go back to my district and tell, you know, a family that they're going to have to triple their electricity to pay for this. So so they try to sneak him in these bills. But one thing we can talk about in another show, we're out of time today, but one thing maybe we can talk about in one show with me, or if we ever do a show, another show in the future here when we do, I think maybe we need to change the way we legislate, George. And I think we got to get we need to legislate so that, you know, so that you legislate one thing, and for example, there's a bill that says this bill is to help workers in this situation, and then vote up and down on that. And then another bill, this bill is to help the companies, and let's have an up and down. In other words, make these into separate
bills. I'll tell you, yeah, the idea that has always been killed, and it's been because a lot of senators and congressmen know how to, you know, that they would lose their pork, is we need line item vetoes. That's something that, the President Reagan was very, very big on, a line item veto. So that way you would bring the bill and he would veto this item, that item. He would not veto the entire bill.
Right.
But, I mean, there are so many congressmen and senators that live and die by pork, by the pork that they put in, that, you know, the line item never been popular. And it is desperately needed. I mean, this is all that it's desperately needed.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the interesting thing about it is I think 40 or 45 of the 50 governors have that, the line item veto. I know we do here in Texas where the governor, I mean, if he gets a piece of legislation from the legislature, he can say, okay, I like this line. I don't like this line. I like this line. And it basically gives the governor then an opportunity to take this stuff out. But the way it is right now in Washington is that you send this whole package to the president, and then he's got to sign it. And when he signs it, of course, he's got to accept a bunch of things that have nothing to do with the purpose of the bill. But that, I think, has to change. I think the light on item veto is without question the way to do it. George, just take a minute and talk about, you worked in the Reagan and Bush administration, so you were in there, you know, coordinating at times with governors and all of that. How would you rate, and I know we don't have a lot of time, but how would you rate the job that the president is doing, coordinating all of these things, all these agencies, all of these governors, and everything has to be done you know, as I say, at a very fast pace. And how would you rate him from having been inside the government and watching how it works? How would you rate him? Rate President
Trump. I rate him very, very high. The reason being because I have seen on a much lesser scale, on a much lesser scale, I have seen FEMA and all of the agencies respond to disasters, whether the disaster was the L.A. riots, the Rodney King riots, or whether they were Katrina, or whether they were, you know, whoever, whatever the catastrophe was. And watching the coordination of state, local agencies with federal agencies, and then within each various agencies, it's a nightmare. It can be a real, real nightmare. And here the president is focusing on one issue, on one thing, on one goal, and just keeping the thing focused. That's what I like about it, is that he's keeping people focused and moving in one direction, rather than everybody starting to get their own little agendas and moving in separate directions. He is keeping everybody with one agenda, with one in one direction. And I am absolutely impressed with his ability.
Yeah, I agree with you. And the American people agree with you, George, because in poll after poll, they show substantial majorities supporting what he's doing. I think a lot of people like the fact that he's trying, number one. He's getting things done. And, you know, there's an energy and a commitment that he brings to the game that, look, I'm not sure many people could do it. But he's got this incredible drive, and I think this is maybe where his experience in the private sector really comes in. He basically cuts through the crap and says, we got to get this done. How do we do it? Type of attitude.
Yep.
And he's getting it done, George. I mean, I am very impressed myself with it.
Well, I have got to say, you know, that's got to be that's the only thing that I can point to. I mean, the big comparison that I make in this situation is during the Carter administration. I was just a little intern at that point on Capitol Hill. I had done my first internship under Ford, and Ford had left, and now I was back and working with working and doing an internship under the Carter administration on Capitol Hill. And although I wasn't working in the administration, I was working at Capitol Hill, observing them on various things, and it was like a Chinese fire drill. Oh, there I go with the racist comment. It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. Anything that we wanted or that we discussed not only had to go through bureaucratic layers, it also had to meet specific agendas. And that was anything. I mean, minor things. Anything that was, you know, anything that was related to a highway closing, anything that was related to some chickens that developed a pox in Nevada. It was, you know, just the minor things. And all of a sudden it became just a boondoggle.
Right.
So having watched that and watching him work on this right now, it's night and day. I mean, it's beyond night and day. I mean, I am extremely impressed with him.
Well, and when you see these press conferences and the way this man is on top of his job, like I've seen very few people, and I've seen quite a few executives in my life, but this man is on top of the job. We've all seen governors deal with natural crises like a flood or whatever, you know, whatever. But this man is hurricanes and all these things. This man's on top of his job. And I think that's why people are supporting him, because they see the effort and they see the results. And, you know, I think that's going to pay off for him politically. I really believe that he's doing he's doing the best he can. Hey, George, as always, thank you for your time, and we will do it again. And thank you so much for your input, as always. And remember, Aretha Franklin, maybe you can listen to one of her songs today.
Well, thinking of Congress and speaking of Congress, I think of the song Chain of Fools.
Yeah, there you go. Chain of Fools. My favorite one is that one that goes, baby, baby, sweet baby, there's something that I gotta say. I love that one from her, baby, baby, sweet baby, there's something I have to say. So that's another one of her great songs. George, you have a great day.
You too, my man. Take care.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, George Rodriguez, down in San Antonio, I'd like to check with him. One of the reasons I wanted to invite him today is because George, in his days in the federal government, worked in both the Reagan and Bush administrations. This would be the first Bush. And he saw firsthand, how things get done. And let's face it, sometimes things are a little slow to get done. And when you look at the way that President Trump is handling this, his ability, his administration, but what I really like the most, I think what I have the greatest of respect for the intensity that he brings to the job. I mean, just watch him in those press conferences. The intensity, the fact that he's got everybody working, that's a rare quality. That's a rare quality. I really do. That's a rare quality in an executive. A lot of executives are really smart, but not all of them are able to get things done. Well, thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.